Please be seated. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. For the sake of the audio record, I will say that today's date is January 12, 2023. This panel of the court today has six cases on its agenda, four of which will be presented with oral argument and two of which will be submitted without oral argument, solely on the briefs. The first case for oral argument is case number A22-1209, State of Minnesota versus Andrew Paul Anderson. Counsel for appellant, you may approach and you may introduce yourself and your client and then begin your argument.
We're using this microphone.
I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that. You have a choice, I guess. You know, the one in the center is the one that we historically have used, and it has the lights, green, yellow, and red. These were set up during the post-COVID era to give people a choice, but so you may use either one. I will mention as well that the center lectern is adjustable. There's a motor that will allow it to go up and down. Button is right on the front edge of the surface.
I'm okay.
Okay, very good. I'm okay too.
Thank you.
Yes, you may begin.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the court. My name is Ryan Grove, and I represent the appellant, Andrew Anderson. Mr. Anderson understands that this is a difficult case to bring before this court. That we're asking the court to do something rare, and candidly, I see the same, and I agree. But before we ask this court to interfere with and scrutinize the discretion of a district court sentence, the court first has to ask the question of, did this district court judge exercise his discretion in the first place or at all? The answer there is no. And so that requires this court to look at its decision in State versus Curtis. Curtis was denied a departure.
Can I stop you there, Mr. Grove? So why do you believe the district court did not exercise its discretion?
It's similar to Curtis, where Curtis set aside valid and compelling circumstances that would warrant consideration that could justify a departure. And this court said Curtis didn't properly use its discretion. Here, the district court ignored every other circumstance besides one: his criminal record. So from the get-go, the district court judge said, I can't do it. I can't do it for you or anybody similarly situated for one reason only: your criminal record and your background. That was both explicit and implicit multiple times by this court or by the district court.
And so your position is that the district judge's saying, I can't do it, is a reflection of the district judge's belief that the law prevents him from doing it? Is that your position?
Not so much that the law prevents him from doing it, but because of one factor only, your criminal record, I cannot look at anything else. No matter what Mr. Anderson or anybody with Mr. Anderson's background, that's what he says in the transcript, that comes before that court would be eligible for even consideration of a departure. So it doesn't matter that the PSI recommended a departure. It doesn't matter that you're currently on probation and you're excelling and doing well. It doesn't matter that you've proven your sobriety over the last 19 months. It doesn't matter that your criminal record is actually dated and 16 years prior is when you picked up the majority of these problems. None of that matters because of your record and your record only. I just can't do it.
But you were saying that means the district court didn't exercise discretion or didn't consider those things. So what is it that makes you conclude that the district court just didn't exercise discretion as opposed to, in its discretion, deciding that someone with this history, including the timing and whether you're on probation and when these things happen, so someone with that history would not qualify in this judge's mind. How do we know, as you're arguing, that the district court simply refused to exercise discretion as opposed to looking at this and in its discretion deciding that this a person with this history wouldn't be eligible?
Because the district court said so. From the beginning, he said...
And what is the quote from the district court that says what you're saying?
He starts by saying, I'm not going to do it, and here's why. This isn't the first felony, it's not the second, it's the third. That's on page 11. Page 12, the district court says, at some point, a judge has no other choice. What's critical here is the judge says, if this was a first felony, maybe. But because it's a third, I can't do it. To be blunt, I cannot put my name on this. And I'll address the concerns with that later. At the end, when the trial counsel expressed disappointment, again, the judge says, I understand, but third felony. So with that, the district court, I believe explicit or implicitly, says, you walk into this courtroom and you have three felonies, no matter what else you bring before me, isn't worthy of consideration. You're not eligible for consideration of a departure. I'm setting those factors aside, and that's what the court did in Curtis. And this court reversed and said you need to exercise your discretion and consider those very compelling circumstances that are present in this case. The court failed to do so. If the court did exercise discretion, it erred for multiple reasons. First reason is it improperly focused on a single trog factor. This court reviewed that in Soto. In Soto, the individual was given a departure. And this court reversed, fixating on the single trog factor of lack of remorse. The Supreme Court reversed or affirmed this decision, but for different grounds. But it reminded this court and future courts that you cannot focus on a single trog factor. That would be misplaced in whether to grant or deny a departure. It has to be the totality of circumstances. That's where the district court erred here. Again, all the district court focused on was one trog factor. It set aside the PSI. It set aside the sobriety. And when it applied that single trog factor, it did so erroneously. His criminal record, 3 felonies, 6 DUIs. No one's going to come before this court and argue that that's a good thing and that's in his favor. But when they're 14 years old, and now you show this sobriety and you relapse during the heart of our pandemic in 2020, while Mr. Anderson went through an unexpected divorce, the way the district court applied his criminal history for the fixating single purpose to deny it was erroneous and should be scrutinized by this court.
Mr. Grove, so this, I mean, it's a sad situation. I mean, I agree, because it sounds like your client really was trying. But the district court said he read the file carefully, thought about this a long time, and ordinarily you'd expect a judge who really was completely inflexible would not have spent much time on this and just said, I'm doing the presumptive. I mean, he picks up this fourth DWI after he's already been charged with his third, correct?
Well, this was actually his sixth DUI.
I'm sorry. I've got the numbers wrong. But it was after this recent relapse, and he had already been charged with another one since the relapse, correct?
Correct. So 6 yeah. months before this incident, when yeah. he relapsed, he was charged with a felony DUI in Washington County.
Right.
Only reason it was a felony is because in Minnesota law, once a felony DWI, always a felony
DWI. But he was driving over the limit, and he'd been charged, and then he kept driving after drinking. We all get that. But why... How do we not take the judge at face value with what he says? I spent a lot of time looking at this and thinking about it. I mean, how do we just ignore that when the standard is abuse of discretion?
I think we don't ignore it. I'm not arguing that he didn't look at these things. I'm not arguing that he lied and didn't read or take his time.
It sounded like your first argument was just that. That he didn't look at them and didn't exercise discretion because he ignored them.
There's a difference.
It sounded like you were arguing that a minute ago.
Well, if I can be clear, there's a difference between reading those things, looking at them, and then saying, sure, I appreciate you doing those things or bringing them before me, but I can't consider those when I have to look at this most important critical aspect here of your record. So
why don't you finish answering the Chief Judge's question, because I do want to come back to this point. It goes to your first argument, but I didn't want to sidetrack you. I apologize.
Well, I think that may have answered it. Or am I arguing that he did not look at those things? No, I'm not. He looked at them. But when he only looks at them and doesn't do a fruitful analysis of a TROG analysis of using all of these and balancing them against one another, it's very clear that he didn't do that when time and time again, all he resorts back to is your record. Anybody with your record, no. Maybe if it was your first, but it's not, so I can't. So just because he looked at it, that alone wasn't enough. But I want to also touch on another error, and I direct this court to
Can I go back to your last point? And that is, that isn't there case law saying that the district judge need not give any reasons for a guideline sentence, a presumptive sentence? And isn't it, I guess, compound question now, isn't it also, I mean, if the district judge said that he read the PSI and read the file and so on, is it necessary for the judge to then recite the things that he read point by point? Isn't it enough just for the judge to say that I have considered everything that's in the PSI and so on?
For your first question, you're correct. The district court does not need to give a written explanation. And for your second, no, I don't think we need district court judges, although I'd prefer it, to go line by line and say, here's what I read, here's exactly what I considered, and here's how I applied it. But they are required, as you argued or held in Curtis, that you need to use the discretion. And so our position is just looking at a file, but when you immediately touch it in your sentencing decision by saying, I can't do it because of your record, and double and triple and quadruple down as that being the only basis, there needs to be something more.
So let me put it this way, because I think this does get to the heart of where I'm at and asking on that first argument. You can think of it in terms of the scales, if we're asking kind of how we know what the district court weighed. How do we know that in the district court's mind, the criminal history wasn't just so weighing so heavily that when the district court says third felony, what the district court means is it's outweighing those other factors? How do we know that that's not what happened? You're arguing in your first point that the district court doesn't even put things on the scale, doesn't weigh anything, comes in with a sort of a bright line rule that three strikes and you're out, and that's why you're saying it doesn't. But how do we know that? And in this case, where the district court says, I've read these things, isn't that an indication that the district court's weighing and considering them?
I don't think that simply reading things equates to a thorough analysis between the two. And I think the district court transcript makes that clear. He erroneously used his criminal history. Because this is a felony DUI is only because 16 or 14 years ago he stacked up four DUIs in a row.
Right, but you're not arguing that there was as a matter of law, considered something he shouldn't have.
No.
Right. So, again, how do we know that the district court didn't consider something? Unless we're going to say the district courts from now on need to explain their reasons and need to attribute some weight to everything that has been presented. Okay, I have letters of support. I'm going to give that value of whatever, 5%, or this is, right? How do we know unless we're going to tell district courts that they have to now explain all of those things? It seems to me that in order for us to agree with you on either point, we would be obligating district courts to do something more than what we've obligated them to do to this point.
And that's why this is that difficult case. Any case like this brought before this court is rare. And any relief we're seeking is rare. But this meets that standard here. It meets the standard because with this position that the court took, no one that walks into that courtroom with a dated criminal record is even eligible for consideration. Those are his words. The last issue that the court made, or error that the court made, is based on State versus O'Brien. State versus O'Brien, it's A21-1266. O'Brien was on probation, and at a revocation hearing, probation recommended reinstatement, and the district court chastised probation for leniency and essentially sentenced the individual to prison, and this court reversed based on improper personal considerations when the district court in O'Brien says, I can't put my name on that. I can't show leniency. I don't want my name in the paper or the press for someone who has these numerous DWIs or drinking issues. That's what the district court did in this situation. Looked at his record and said, I can't put my name on this for anybody with a similar background. That's an improper personal belief used to justify this sentence. And for those reasons, Mr. Anderson requests reversal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grove. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you may approach and introduce yourself and your client and begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Jessica Beerworth, and I represent Dakota County here this morning. The district court in this matter exercised its discretion, and it did not err in its exercise of that discretion. As specifically Judge Bryan has already pointed out, the fact of the matter is we have a record here, and we know that the court considers things. And we are not required to have a court say, I considered this letter, I considered this document, I considered this record. It is evident from this record that this court spent a lot of time looking at this and thinking about this. That is what the court told the appellant right out of the gate. That was in the transcript at pages 11 and 12. This court would only reverse in a rare case. This is not that rare case. The district court carefully considered things, and it said so on the record. It acknowledged the pre-sentence investigation, and it acknowledged the letters of support, four of them specifically, that were submitted on the defendant appellant's behalf. Furthermore, it also acknowledged and commended the appellant for doing well. The district court says, I see that you're doing well. But what appellant wants is appellant wants you to set aside that criminal record. Appellant wants you to set aside the fact that it was a 6th DWI. Set aside the fact that it was a 3rd felony DWI. Set aside the fact that it was a 2nd felony DWI within 2 months. Set aside the fact that during the course of this DWI, the appellant was reported to have been all over the road. Set aside the fact that his blood alcohol was twice the legal limit. Those were things that the district court also pointed out.
It seems like when you're listing all of the things that would have to be set aside to grant this request, it seems like now we're getting into abuse of discretion. And before we get to that point, I do want to ask a little bit, because it seems if Curtis is supposed to mean what it says, how are we supposed to know if the district court doesn't say what they're considering? And there is a distinction to be made between saying, I read something and I'm considering it, right?
I think the court has to look at the record as a whole. And in doing that in this particular case, especially when you have a judge, as this court has already pointed out, who doesn't have to give any reasons, tells the appellant, I'm not going to depart, and here is why. You have a very clear, very substantial record to the district court's thought process in this matter. If the court were to make some new rule that the district court has to give a percentage to everything, as Your Honor has used as an example, well, that would be a rule that this court, I suppose, would have the authority to.
But to put it differently, it seems like either we are going to say we have this rule in Curtis that requires courts to consider something, And that means that district courts have to say, on one side is this, on the other side is this, and I'm weighing things, this side outweighs the other, without percentages. But on one hand, you have that that seems to be at odds with the case law that says you don't need to explain your reason if it's a presumptive sentence. So it seems like if we're going to follow the rule in Curtis, then maybe we have to consider whether something should be required of a district court judge. So how can you reconcile those two things?
But we have something else to put into that reconciliation, and that is the sentencing guidelines and the objectives of those sentencing guidelines and what district courts are instructed to do and the purpose of those guidelines in making sentences consistent. We're not just out here going, weighing these things. We have this set of guidelines for a reason, and it is to make things consistent. So with the guidelines to also anchor us in what district court judges are doing, this discretion I submit to the court that is already in place is sufficient for our district court judges. So I don't believe a new rule would be needed in that sense. So with that, again, having the appellate's request of setting aside all of those other things and a district court saying, I did consider all of these things, there is no error here. The district court properly exercised its discretion. It imposed a sentence. It was not a sentence based in any way on a legal error. It was not a sentence based on any erroneous facts. And for that reason, it's a sentence that this court should affirm. The district court judge didn't say, I can't put my name on this because I don't want anybody to think I did something. The district court factored in society. And that's something that appellant overlooked both in his brief as well as before you just now. While he outlined the legal principle, did not address what this district court also said, that a departure is not something that's just good for the appellant or the defendant here. A departure has to be good for that person and society. And this district court went through the process of telling the appellant specifically that I have to consider society. Just as you are taking care of your grandchild or that is a concern for you, I have to take care of society because the law says so. And that's a responsibility that the district court judge has to consider in this case as well. So I submit to this court that the district court properly exercised its jurisdiction, its discretion, and it did not err. I have nothing further for this court, and absent any other questions, I would rest on my brief and have a seat.
It appears there are no further questions for you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Grove, you have an opportunity for rebuttal, 5 minutes.
Thank you. The question about Curtis and its application is warranted. What does the court need to do moving forward? Does it need to weigh it? Does it need to say, here's the percentages I did? I think the answer is, we just look at the record. In Curtis, there wasn't I looked at it, but I didn't really apply it, and so that's why this court reversed it. Curtis, the district court judge, said, I don't find any valid or compelling circumstances that would warrant this type of relief. I'm going to do the safe route and impose a guideline sentence. This court reviewed the record, like it can in this file, and said there are compelling circumstances everywhere. You didn't look at those, and if you did, you didn't do it properly. We're going to send this back so you can use your discretion. In this situation, I'm not saying that the district court judge needed to say, I gave 20% to the PSI, you did great on probation, and your 19 months of sobriety, therefore it's a balancing of the scale, but you just fall short. Instead, the district court judge says, I have to find that you are particularly amenable, but I'm dealing with somebody with a third felony, 6 DUI. It all comes back to the district court ignoring all of those other compelling, valid circumstances like Curtis and simply saying, I'm falling back on the lone trog factor, and that's why I can't do it for you, but I'm also going to go one step further and say, I can't do that for anybody with your type of background. So it's explicit and implicit here that there was no discretion. And if there was, it was a clear abuse of the discretion when you look at the totality of these circumstances that were presented.
For your second point there, I mean, does it matter? It seems to me that we should try to determine whether the district court is making a case-specific statement on the one hand, or on the other hand, a generally applicable statement, such as a rule of law or a general principle that it implies in every case. So when the judge says, I can't do it because of the third felony, can't put my name on it, do you agree with that rubric, that's an appropriate way to determine whether the judge exercised discretion is to try to determine whether the statements made were case-specific or generally applicable principles that go beyond a single case?
I do, but I think that's extremely difficult to do. Each judge would maybe come up with a different decision with this sentence. The Court of Appeals, if each of your honors was on this case, there might have been a different decision. That's the hard part. We don't know. And I don't think we need to find that as a rule of law to determine if this was case-specific or if it was judge-specific. But what this court did here was say anybody before him with that background. That's where the error was made. What this court did, like in O'Brien, said, I can't put my name on something like this. Personal beliefs and considerations. That's where another error was made. So with those errors, that goes to whether this court used its discretion. It did so improperly. But it didn't use its discretion in the first place, so this court doesn't need to get there, just like it didn't need to in Curtis. So it's not that rare case. Unless there are any other questions, I'll rest.
It appears not. Thank you for your argument.
Thank you
to both counsel for your arguments. The case is submitted, and the court will issue its opinion.